By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Moody's Talks Focus on Finance. I'm Carolyn Henson.
And I'm Michael Porta.
And today we'll be talking to Moody's analysts Eduardo Calandro in London, Rita Sahu in New York, and Nicholas Xu in Beijing about the outlook for global banks in 2023. Michael, it's looking like another tough year ahead, and not just for banks, right? The world seems to be grappling with a multitude of shocks all at the same time, and things look pretty unpredictable out there.
Thanks, Carolyn. Yes, interest rates have risen very quickly, as you know, and there's the prospect of higher interest rates coinciding with slowing economic growth for some time. Meanwhile, supply chain disruptions remain an after effect of the COVID-19 pandemic, though they may be starting to ease a little bit. And the Russia-Ukraine conflict has sent shockwaves worldwide, dialing up geopolitical tensions and creating huge uncertainty for investors.
Yeah, and the Ukraine conflict has also triggered a severe energy crisis in Europe that's creating huge economic strains there, as well as stretching government finances and causing social fractures. So we're expecting Europe to tip into recession next year, and that's bound to affect the banks.
Yeah, and in China, the zero COVID policy and property market correction have damaged the economy. We expect China's real GDP growth to ease to 3% in 2022, that's full year, before recovering modestly to 4% in 2023 and 2024. But that's still well below past trends. And lastly, the U.S. also looks set for a recession in 2023, though likely a mild one according to our forecasts.
So it's pretty gloomy stuff. And how will the banks cope with all this? Well, we have three Moody's analysts with us here today who could bring some clarity to this question. Eduardo, Rita, and Nicholas, hello to all of you, and welcome to Focus on Finance. So Eduardo, turning to you first, you've just published the Global Banks Outlook for 2023. Can you give us an overview, first of all, in very broad terms as to how things are looking for the banks next year from a global perspective, before we take a closer look region by region?
Sure. Indeed, our macroeconomic forecasts, as you mentioned, are pretty gloomy. Especially in advanced economies, real GDP will contract in 2023 with only partial rebounds in 2024. We expect inflation to remain high and interest rates will continue to challenge, or higher interest rates will continue to challenge the debt servicing capacity of banks' borrowers. In advanced economies, household debt remains high, albeit slightly reduced from in the last 10 years. But this high level of debt limits the retail sector's financial flexibility when cost of living increases and interest on mortgages rise, for example. But nevertheless, our outlook for banks globally is stable because we take into account several mitigating factors. First of all, unemployment is a key leading indicator for household defaults, and we expect it to remain low. Another thing to remember that we take into account in our outlook is that the material portion of risky assets have now moved away from banks. That's been a trend that's been going on for around 10 years, or at least 10 years. For example, in Europe, the corporate bond market has grown massively since 2012. Underwriting standards have also tightened in the last decade, which means that loans are now more concentrated on strong borrowers. And overall, we mean that defaults will rise, but only moderately. Loan loss provisions will not rise as much because defaults will increase only moderately and because banks already set aside large loan loss reserves. This happened in the last couple of years in anticipation of macroeconomic weakening. Rising interest rates also mean the bank's net interest income will rise because interest on lending in many banking systems rise faster than deposits. And banks have large volumes of current accounts where deposits have returns at zero or close to it. So which means that banks will still make profit while capital will remain strong. Liquidity will also remain strong, and that's another mitigating factor that we took into account when we gave a stable outlook for banks globally.
Thanks for that survey, Eduardo. And just to recap quickly, if I may, what seems to be underpinning the stable outlook is unemployment will remain low, loan loss provisions not likely to rise much, banks remain profitable, and capital and liquidity look pretty good. But let's get a little more detailed on one particular driver. The Russia-Ukraine conflict has sent oil and gas prices through the roof and is causing gas supply shortages in Europe in particular. As a result, we expect Europe to slip into recession next year. So where does that leave European banks in the overall picture? Are any systems more vulnerable than others?
Well, yes. Europe has been hit hard by the energy crisis, and we identified six countries which are most susceptible to energy price inflation, and the largest of which are Germany and Italy. For the German banking system, we have a negative outlook, which reflects a stronger GDP contraction in 2023. It's around minus 1.8%. German banks have also an additional challenge compared with some of their European peers because they have a large stock of long-term fixed rate lending base, which means that German banks will not have the full benefit of high interest rates as quickly as other banking systems. And of course, German banks still have a chronically high cost base, which will be hit by high inflation and limits flexibility.
Thank you for that detail, Eduardo. And turning to North America now, Rita, you cover a number of banks in North America. I understand there'll be a mild recession in the US and Canada next year, and inflation is already taking a bite out of borrowers' repayment capacity. But we think banks are still on pretty stable footing, right? What are the issues that you would highlight for banks in North America?
Yeah, so, you know, like some of the European countries, we are also expecting a recession in the US and Canada in 2023, but it is going to be milder and shorter. So compared to what you heard from Eduardo on some of the countries that he covers, in the US, we're going to have a smaller 0.4% fall in GDP. And in Canada, it's probably going to be a 0.6% fall. Asset quality metrics in North America are also, you know, currently very unsustainably low. So we do expect that they will weaken. You know, very similar to Europe, the outlook for profitability is positive, and that really is because of higher interest rates. Also, the banks here have a lot of diverse non-interest income that helps. And then maybe the last thing I'll mention is that the North American banks have very strong liquidity. They have really high core deposit funding, pretty low wholesale funding, and then large holdings of liquid assets.
Thanks, Rita. And recently, the team in the U.S. has been writing a bit on monetary policy and quantitative tightening in particular. How are those driving some of the dynamics that you mentioned for North American banks?
Yeah, it is a very important dynamic here that's affecting the banking system. So QT does reduce bank deposit levels and it raises liquidity and funding pressures. But again, this is from a very strong level. The banks amassed a lot of excess deposits and liquidity during the pandemic as a result of all the government stimulus. And we have always anticipated that some of this would reverse. In the U.S., this deposit outflow has already started. Canadian banks, their deposit growth remains pretty strong, but they've also seen their use of market funds already go back to pre-pandemic levels. The other thing that QT affects is the valuations of bank securities, which fall as interest rates rise. So for the largest banks, these unrealized losses on the securities that are in their available for sale investments are included in their other comprehensive income, which lowers their regulatory capital. This kind of accounting, it doesn't affect the regulatory capital of the smaller banks. You know, the last thing I might mention is that, you know, the risk of recession does build up pressure on household borrowers and budgets, which then increases the bank's asset risk. Everyone's mentioned that higher interest rates reduce debt affordability and also the excess consumer and commercial liquidity that was built up in this period. You know, additionally, in the US and Canada, consumer debt levels have been rising over the last couple of years.
So, Rita, if I can break in here, is there a difference between the prospects for the largest North American banks? I mean, the big global investment banks, and then the smaller regional ones?
Yeah, Carolyn, there are, and they really are in capital and funding. So starting with capital, for the largest US-based global systemically important banks, capital will rise because they have higher capital requirements. But then for the US regional banks, capital has declined over the last couple quarters because they have lower capital requirements, and they still have some room to continue down. The Canadian banks have high capital levels and are already above their required minimums. The interesting thing is that they do have different risk-weighted density, which results in them having weaker leverage than some of their U.S. peers. On the funding side, the large U.S. banks benefit from pretty strong retail deposit franchise, but regional banks, specifically those outside the top 25, have begun to resort to more market funding, which is almost back to pre-pandemic levels. Even though their deposit outflows have been moderate, they don't have the same level of liquid assets. So they had to use borrowings to fund their loan growth in recent quarters. And we do think this is going to continue as QT goes on. Among the Canadian banks, their deposit growth has been pretty strong, and their use of market funding is also back to their pre-pandemic levels.
Thanks, Rita. So the picture is pretty stable for North American banks, despite some differences when it comes to capital by size of bank and also for funding profile. Turning to Asia Pacific, we also have a stable outlook in that region, though the dynamics look a bit different. And I think we just published a negative outlook on China's banks in particular. So let's bring Nicholas in to explore that. Nicholas, to begin, what are China's banks up against?
Hello, Michael. Yes, indeed. We have been thinking about the question, what drives the negative outlook for Chinese banks? The drivers are mixed. Operating environment and asset quality are likely to deteriorate, consistent with our global view. Funding and liquidity, as well as capital, are likely to be stable, also consistent with our global view. What made that difference for us is the view on profitability, which is likely to deteriorate. As Eduardo discussed, major central banks have been tightening monetary policies, pushing up interest rates, thus benefiting bank profitability. However, China has diverged from this global trend. PBOC, the Chinese central bank, has eased monetary policies to manage a slower economy. As a result of monetary policy easing, interest rates have been declining in China, thus hurting Chinese banks' profitability. To sum up, we conclude on a negative outlook for the Chinese banking sector after balancing views on a mixture of negative and stable drivers.
Very interesting, Nicholas. So how about the rest of Asia? Are the dynamics different there?
Yes, Caroline. The rest of Asia is more aligned with our global view of stability. By and large, we expect higher interest rates will boost profitability through expanding net interest margins at most Asian banks. Sound profitability will support organic capital generation by way of higher return earnings. Hence, bank capital will remain stable. One risk, however, of rising interest rates is higher debt servicing costs for borrowers. This is likely to lead to weaker asset quality for most Asian banks. We expect NPLs to surface towards the second half of 2023. Therefore, the important question for us is whether this asset risk will be threatening enough to damage our stable outlook. We think not, because the higher asset risk will be mitigated by two supporting factors. The first mitigant is the higher level of loan loss reserves built up in many Asian banking systems. The second mitigant is the healthy economic growth in Asia, albeit at a lower growth rate in 2023 compared to this year because of higher inflation and higher interest rates. Hence, we maintain a stable outlook for Asian banks outside China.
I get it. Yeah, thanks very much for that, Nicholas. So turning back to you, Eduardo, there are some new risks facing banks these days, right? There's non-traditional risks, things like environmental risk, social risk, cyber risk. They're all having an impact as well, right?
Yeah, that's correct. For example, cyber risks remain high for banks because despite massive investments in cybersecurity, banks remain likely targets of cyber attacks, and that's because of their importance to financial stability and their high digitalization. On other non-traditional risks, banks face increasing scrutiny by investors and regulator on the validity of their claims of being environmentally friendly, the so-called greenwashing, which is something new for banks.
You mean they're lending to environmentally friendly rather than carbon-intensive companies?
Correct.
And then the risk of cybersecurity, that brings to mind also digitalization, which continues to be an important area for banks as they compete to provide a superior customer experience and also lower their costs. In the U.S., banks are very much focused on generating positive operating leverage so they can continue to make these technology investments. But at the same time, it also requires that they keep up a really robust cybersecurity system. Another thing that probably is worth mentioning is the private credit markets. They have grown tremendously over the last couple of years and are a risk to the banking system because standards have loosened there and they do compete and pose some contagion risk to the banking system. Probably the only slight positive is that these private credit markets tend to fund the weakest borrowers, not the banks.
So scrutiny of environmental, social, and governance risks is rising, both from regulators and investors. And cyber risk, private credit, and digitalization remain areas to watch in bank credit. Pulling back out to a global view, I have a final question for you, Eduardo. Are there any regions where the prospects for banks are brighter or conversely bleaker than the general stable outlook?
Well, we actually don't have any region on a positive outlook, but we would like to mention Gulf countries. And that's because high oil prices and initiatives to diversify the economies away from oil are boosting economic growth there. On the negative side, I would mention some banking systems in Africa. For example, banks in Ghana and Kenya have high volumes of domestic sovereign bonds. And this links the bank to the credit profile of the sovereigns. And the sovereigns are under significant pressure due to higher debt accumulated during the pandemic and the increased cost of debt.
Thank you, Eduardo. Well, we need to wrap up there. So many thanks to you, Eduardo, Rita, and Nicholas, for your perspectives on bank credit heading into 2023. And thanks to all of our listeners tuning in. Please join us again in January for the next episode of Focus on Finance.
Thanks for listening to this Moody's Talks podcast. To find out more about the topics discussed, please follow the links in the show notes. You can check out other Moody's Talks podcasts by visiting moodys.com/podcasts.